This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. I'm Sean Tubbs. The Rivanna Trail loops around Charlottesville through the city in Albemarle County, almost exclusively along privately owned land, following trails cared for by a network of dedicated volunteers. The rustic trail is the best place to get away from it all without leaving the city, a fact that is increasingly recognized by developers, landowners, and government officials. That's a far cry from the early days of the trail, according to Diana Foster. She's the past president of the Rivanna Trail Foundation, which runs the 20-mile pathway. Currently, about 18 miles of the loop have been built, with another 5 miles of companion trails. Every November, Foster leads a one-day trek around the trail to draw attention to the natural beauty of the urban wilderness. I recently took a much smaller trip with Foster through a small section of the Rivanna Trail from Jordan Park in southeast Charlottesville to 5th Street near the Willoughby section of town. I asked Foster to tell me about the ultimate goals of the Rivanna Trail Foundation.
Our goal right now is to facilitate a regional network of hiking trails. Since we started in 1992, lots of neighborhoods have been inspired by the model, and they have volunteers going out on Saturdays. They are going into the floodplains of the streams where development cannot have, and they're putting in similar kinds of rustic trails. And our goal is to get all these different groups working together so that we can physically start getting the trails to meet up with each other. So we have this incredible regional system.
What role do regional governments play in this? As I understand it, they don't contribute any money, but do they play a role, and are they interested in having a trail system such as that?
They are very supportive. They are very proud. They advertise the fact that we have these beautiful hiking trails, and each jurisdiction supports us in different ways. They do not, in general, give direct money to the purchasing of the land or the building of the trail, but they are grateful and totally dependent on what the volunteers are doing. In the city, what they have done is they have worked with us in figuring out where the land ownership is. In the city, we go through 7 city parks, so we work very closely with the parks staff on how to manage where the trails intersect with the parks. In the county, and at least a third of our trails are out in the county, there is a greenways coordinator, and his position is to get the easements, work with the landowners, and then work with the volunteers to help put the trails in.
What's the social value of having a trail system like this in a, or the social or the citizen value, I guess, in having something that's a rustic trail as opposed to, say, a paved trail?
The reason we build rustic trails is environmentally, it doesn't make sense, and it would not be good to put a hard surface trail that close to the stream. Our trails run through natural buffers that are running along these streams, and the forested and vegetated buffers are the most efficient, most economical protector of our waterways. So we try to disturb those as little as we can. If you were to build hard surface multi-use trails, more people could access them, but it would have a negative impact on the environment. There are places in the system where hard surface trails are appropriate, and we support those. And one example is along the Rivanna through Riverview Park and extending up to Free Bridge and to the VFW. When you are talking along Meadow Creek and Morris Creek, these are much more sensitive buffers. These streams flood several times a year. We had a massive flood just 2 weeks ago, and we try to keep things as positively impacting as possible. In terms of the value to the citizens, when you get into these woods, you don't see houses. What we have helped preserve is create a resource where people can escape the busyness of urban living. People get in here, they can see firsthand nature, students can see examples of things they're learning in school. People can get away from their telephones, get away from their computers. It's a retreat. People can exercise here. You cannot see the fact that you're near houses. You don't see businesses. There are many places where you're on the trail and you don't hear any cars. You really do think that you are in a wilderness. It's a place for people to escape the busyness of urban living. They're away from their phones, they're away from their Palm Pilots, they're away from their computers. it's just time for them to retreat to themselves and sort of regather their strength. And they're extremely safe because there's this perfect balance right now of people using them daily on a regular basis, but there are not that many people that you feel like you're surrounded on a sidewalk. You are out in nature.
And you're still in the middle of the city.
That's right. Because it's a circle, I would guess that no one is more than 2 miles from a trail at any point, so they are accessible to everyone who lives in this community.
Should we walk down just a small portion of it here then?
That would be wonderful, yeah. This is one of the prettiest sections in the trail.
And if you could maybe describe where we are and what we're about to cross.
Sure. We are on the west side of Jordan Park, and we have just passed one of our green trailhead signs, and we are approaching Pollock Creek, which is a little tiny creek that comes down from Ridge Street. And because of the force of these small streams, even during heavy rains, it pushes aside all of the little rocks and things that we might put up here as rock hops. So on our to-do list is to build a slightly improved rock hop, and this will consist of precast concrete stepping stones that we will rebar into the stream. It's like one step up from using the natural rocks that are here. We always try to impact the natural environment as little as we can. The current situation is not acceptable because under many conditions the rocks are not stable, and we have a lot of people on the trails who are not real comfortable being in the really wild wilderness, so we try to make it user-friendly for them.
Okay, so this is about maybe 5 feet across or so, and I guess let's cross. Now, wish me luck as I try to cross this here. Oop. It's sort of like playing leapfrog, isn't it?
Very much.
And we're across, and I guess, so we are in a city still.
You are in a city, but if you listen to your feet, you'll now think about crushing these dried autumn leaves rather than the background noise that you hear from compressors and cars, and the forest will start to envelop you, and this is where your mind will go now. So it's a real quick transition from being in the park where it was bright and sunny. Now we're in the shade, totally surrounded by trees and thick vegetation. You can hear the birds. It's a different world.
Do you clear the trail with rakes and things like that, or do you just let people walk on it, I guess, to sort of get the track down?
No, we go in initially, and what we do is we flag where we would like the trail to go. We will find the high points where the flooding will be less, and we mark out a trail, usually by hanging pink flagging tape, and we get our volunteers in with hand tools. We only use hand tools. We tell people just connect the dots. And what they do is they cut through in order to connect the pieces of flagging to flagging. And we build to Appalachian Trail standards where the foot tread itself is 1.5 feet wide. On either side, you're creating a tunnel, like a tunnel through the green vegetation. And on the sides, it's about 4 to 5 feet wide, so that if you hold out your arms, in the ideal situation, you're not going to touch anything. And then reaching overhead, that tunnel should be clear to about 7 or 8 feet. Of course, you're in a riparian area where the soil is always wet, even in a drought situation. So everything grows extremely vigorously all summer. And because we're all volunteers, we can't possibly keep up with keeping that tunnel totally clear all summer. So there are going to be a lot of places where vegetation starts to come in and hit people in the knees and the thighs, but there's nothing out there that's going to hurt you.
So we are standing at a juncture here where the trail looks like the trail used to go that way, and you have a stack of wood. And why did you decide to block off this part?
Sometimes we have built on pre-existing trails, and this particular one had been where an old sewer road was, and actually still is. there had been all-terrain vehicle use on this trail, and in this particular situation, we didn't want to build a trail that would attract more ATV use. So what we did is we have blocked off the ATV trail, and then we have created a new hiker trail that is closer to the stream. And when I say closer, it's going to be about 40 feet closer, because this is a really nice wide buffer. Luckily, over the years, the ATV use has just dropped to zero in this particular area.
So we are now standing overlooking which river is this?
This is Morris Creek. The Rivanna River has two major tributaries in this area. Morris Creek is on the south side of the city. Meadow Creek is on the north side. And we have trails that run along either side of them. The connection on the west side of town runs over the headwaters of Meadow Creek and up and over Observatory Hill.
And do you encourage people to stay out of the creek? I can imagine people with dogs and animals might be interested in having their dog take a quick dip in there. Is that something that you encourage or discourage?
We don't encourage dogs to go in and out of the creek, but that sure looks like a fun place to play. In terms of humans, it's not safe for people to swim in these creeks. Morris Creek has a lot of E. coli bacteria in it from the upstream farms. Meadow Creek has a lot of chemicals in it from runoff from Route 29. There are other organizations in town that are trying to correct those problems. One thing that we do, though, is we highly encourage at certain places for people to explore the edges of the creek, to get as close as they can, to step in there with their shoes if they want. There are lots of fun little creatures that live under the rocks. There are gorgeous rocks in that creek. It's fun for little kids to throw stones into the creek.
Does Morris Creek serve as the boundary line between where we're standing on the city and are we looking over at the county about 20 feet, about 30 feet that way?
In general, that's true, but you really have to look at every particular area, because where we are standing right now, we're actually standing in the county, because the county landowner on the other side, his property extends into the city at this point, or extends onto this side of the creek, probably at least 50 yards. What we have done is research who the various landowners are, and then one by one we have asked their permission if we can walk on their land. So the person who owns the property across the creek from here has given us and the public permission to walk on this side of the creek.
What's the benefit to the landowner to allow that to happen?
It is outreach to the community. It is making his land available to the public. It is thinking a little bit beyond what he owns. In many cases, the pieces of property are large enough that the landowner can have their own privacy around their home or around their business, but yet open this little tiny corner to the public.
Well, let's venture on then. As we stop along the trail and look at some of these amazing trees, both dead and live, we're staring at, I'm not quite sure what this was, but it's a very, very round, huge tree. What resources do you make educational trips around the trail to sort of educate people about what's around us and the natural settings, like what kind of trees are these? What kind of vines are these? What kind of fungus is that?
Actually, RTF's mission is primarily to build these trails. After we have the trails built, it is our hope that the public will then take ownership of them, while still respecting the rights of the landowners. But there are so many groups in town that have the expertise to interpret what is on the trails. There's the Rivanna Conservation Society that can talk about the importance of these buffers. There's a Native Plant Society. There's a Wildflower Society. There was a Natural History Museum. There are the birders. all these groups are invited to come in and make use of the resources that are on here. When we look at this dead tree, you can see, somebody could tell what kind of tree it is from the bark that is on there. I think it is a really old sycamore tree, but I'm not sure. We make no attempt to cut it down because it is providing habitat for all kinds of animals, from woodpeckers to titmice to nuthatches to squirrels. You can see the...
And don't forget the beetles and things.
Oh, the beetles that are helping to decay it. You can see the fungus that's growing on it. It's a lesson right there for children and other people to see what happens to things as they decompose. We have a loop attached to our trail that is on the Department of Forestry property. That is in Fontaine Research Park. It's a 1 mile loop, and that trail is interpreted. And there is a lot of explanation on that trail about the wood that's there and what it's used for and how it benefits people for things in addition to lumber.
And of course, because, you know, that's a very tall tree, I'm not good at estimating. I'm going to guess about 100 feet, just a guess. Is there a point where you would want to take something out like that out? Or because this is a natural setting, a rustic setting, would you let nature just take its course?
In general, we let them fall when they're ready to fall. If they fall across the trail and we can't reroute the trail very easily, we have volunteers with chainsaws who will come in. We do have some places where trees are leaning over the trail, and it does look like an accident waiting to happen. In those very rare cases, we will go in and take the tree down ahead of time.
I seem to be stuck to a vine here. Let me just
cut that off. That's one of our lovely invasives. It's multiflora rose.
Now, you've been involved with the organization since 97, did
yes.
you say? So, but before that, you've been involved with walking, of course. And are you able to spot what is out of place and what should be here and what shouldn't be here? I'm not talking necessarily about litter. That's obvious. But in terms of
plants?
In terms of invasive species.
Invasive species is a big issue in Virginia Forest right now. I mean, it's a very severe problem because there are certain plants that truly are coming in and taking over the native species. And things like bittersweet are a big threat because they can grow in the shade, and people are very concerned about bittersweet. We are just starting to work with the Parks Department and with the Virginia Native Plant Society to identify some of the more serious places on the trail. Eliminating invasives is a very, very time-consuming kind of work. It has to be done by hand. Not everyone can spray chemicals. We don't want to spray chemicals this close to the waterways. So we are trying to use science and volunteer power and the expertise in the area to come up with the best solution for them.
How many volunteers do you have?
We have approximately 400 members of RTF. We have a monthly work party to which maybe 20 to 50 people will come out on a particular day. And then we have the first Saturday of June each year, National Trails Day, which is an annual holiday. We celebrate it here. And we will have 200 to 300 people for those days.
So if I'm on the trail and I see a stick like this, for instance, it's just a branch that's covering the trail, what should I do with this? And this seems to be just some brush that has just ended up here. Do you encourage people, just even when they're just casually walking along, to keep the trail clean?
That's our dream, that everyone will feel obligated to pick up a stick that looks like this. I call them our little trail angels. Those are the individuals who don't want to come out to a work day necessarily, but they take ownership of the trail in some way. What we recommend is if you see loose sticks like this that have fallen down from the tree, just toss them off to the side. You don't have to cart them out to any special place. If you just toss them off, they'll decompose out there and provide more habitat for some little critter out there. If you get inspired and want to do some clipping, carry some hand clippers and just remember the dimensions of the green tunnel that we're trying to create. About 4 feet wide, 7 feet tall, don't worry about the foot tread because people's footsteps will create that. And just get those random twigs that are coming in and hitting people in the knees. I've bragged about, we have one lady that lives on the north side of town, and she has adopted one multiflora rosebush. That's all she takes care of. She takes care of it very, very, very well, and it never hangs on to the trail. And that's perfect. If everybody would adopt a little rosebush, our maintenance chores would be so much easier. So yes, Sean, pick up the stick and toss it off.
I certainly will here. Of course, I'll just throw it over there.
Perfect.
Hooray. Is this a difficult trail for people to walk? Are there steep parts?
If you get our trail guide, we have tried to identify the sections with how difficult they are. There are some that are like this that are perfectly flat and very easy. You could even push a wheelchair through here. There are, of course, some paved sections that are very accessible. And then we have some that are very, very rocky and some with hills. And when people ask us about them, we try to be extremely honest and say we don't recommend certain people go on the more rigorous trails because you could twist an ankle. RTF, the city, the county, do not own the land upon which most of the trail lies. So what we have here, we're still on that little piece of county land that belongs to the landowner on the other side. But what you are seeing in that hillside belongs to another landowner, and that landowner has the right to develop that land. It is our hope that everybody will work together and remember that the buffer to the stream is extremely important for protecting the water, that it's this natural resource through which people can walk, and that when that development happens, everybody will work together to try to preserve a good sized buffer that will remain in this natural state like that.
Okay. Excellent. Well, let's continue on.
We're still on looking at Morris Creek, and we are looking down on what is called a riffle. A riffle is an area in a stream where it's fairly shallow and the water has to tumble over rocks. This is an excellent place for oxygen to get pulled into the water, and you will have a high number of oxygen-dependent stream creatures that will live there that won't live anyplace else in the creek. So these natural riffles are extremely important parts of the stream. That's sort of another reason that the trail is so good, because it brings you to the stream so that children and other people can see the different aspects of the stream. If you look just downstream a little bit, you can see some wavy patterns in the sand. That's because it's just natural for the creek to bring down silt and sand when it comes. It is natural to have these curves in the stream, and it will deposit sand in these always changing patterns that you see there.
So I'm just curious, as it looks today, now streams are always changing. You never see the same stream twice. I'm wondering, how does this look though? Does the water level look healthy at this time?
The water level is healthy. If you had been here on October 8th when we had our work party, the water was about three-fourths up these stream banks, and these stream banks are probably 10 to 12 feet high. So instead of seeing and hearing this little riffle, you would have seen more of a roaring kind of sound. The power in these streams is just absolutely amazing, and they present challenges to us because we want to cross the various streams in various places in order to get to the land where we have permission for trail. And figuring out what kind of safe crossing to put into the creeks is a complicated matter. You've got to consider the science, the engineering, the permitting process with the state, because they're very concerned about the life in the streams, and money. So that's why it takes us a long time to to get some of our crossings completed.
If you had money, I'm just wondering, would it have less environmental impact if you could just build bridges over the streams? Or?
It really depends on each site. And bridges are not always the most appropriate crossing for a rustic trail. Sometimes it's overkill. So we really do analyze each situation. We see what is the local population makeup that's using that particular trail. If we have a lot of senior citizens or young children crossing in a particular area, we would probably put a different kind of crossing in. Rather than, say, if you're over near the university where you have primarily trail runners on it. Trail runners can go through water that's 16 inches deep. They don't care if their feet get wet. We just have to look at each particular situation. You just can't make a pat answer.
So it seems to me that the entire trail system, the entire loop around, plus the connecting trails within the loop, it seems to me that it's a very multi-use modular system in which each system is, wherein each section provides a different role to different people, correct? Is that a good way to...
That is a perfect statement of it, perfect analysis. And we are trying to reach out to all those different kinds of users. We try to, you know, when people use the word improve a trail, improve means different things to different people. And there are some sections where it is perfectly reasonable and it's the right thing to blacktop it or to put some kind of hard surface in there. There are other areas where you wouldn't want anything more than rocks and dirt.
Excellent. Well, let's continue on then. And we're getting closer and closer to Fifth Street. I'm seeing at this particular spot, we're standing underneath some sort of tree that has dropped off some sort of hard green fruit of some sort. Can you describe what we're looking at here?
These are black walnuts.
Does this provide a hazard? Because we're looking at hundreds and hundreds of, well, actually not hundreds, we're looking at several dozen of these things in one very concentrated setting. Would a trail crew clean these up so people don't slip on them, or would you just let them fall so that perhaps many of them will root?
We would not clean these up. We don't have the person power to clean up every little nut that falls. We build our trail to rustic standards. We put a warning on all of our signs, hike at your own risk. Please, when you're hiking, just look down and see things like this. I think the only people who might slip on something like this would be people who are running and not paying attention to the trail surface. In terms of growing, I suspect that the squirrels will eat all of these before they would have too much of a chance to grow. Some of them will grow, but most of them provide food for the local inhabitants. We have lots of animals like possums, raccoons. They're going to come in here and make use of these.
Would you have deer in this setting? I mean, we're on several acres of wooded land at the moment.
Oh, we would have tons of deer. We have occasionally bear come through here, too. Lots of red fox, approximately 120 species of birds. These woods are filled with wildlife. The nice thing about this woods right now is on both sides of the creek, it's a really, you can see a whole bunch of birds up in the canopy up there right now, a bunch of titmice. It's undeveloped for probably at least a quarter mile in both directions. So you have a bigger section of forest, and there are a lot of animals that require a bigger piece of forest like that, so it's unbroken. So that's why this particular area is extremely rich in wildlife.
Let's venture on then. So this is a confluence here where Morris Creek runs to our left, and can you tell me the
rest? And that's Morris Creek ahead of you, straight ahead with the little waterfall that you see. And this is Rock Creek coming in from the west. Rock Creek is a smaller stream that comes in all the way from Cherry Avenue, running through Johnson Village and a couple of neighborhoods there. We're pretty excited about Rock Creek because, one, it's absolutely beautiful, and, two, it still has a lot of undeveloped land running along it fairly far upstream. And as that land is developed, we are hoping that the city and the developers will work together to preserve a good buffer and to include trails in that buffer, because that would then create a wonderful spur to the major loop, enabling all these neighborhoods to reach our more major trail system. Here, I'd love to go down here, right into the stream.
Sure.
An example of a place where we really do encourage people to come down, especially with their young children, to explore things like this. Nothing beats getting right down at the stream level, and if you're only 3 feet tall, I mean, you're really close here. The water is 2-3 inches deep. If the adults are there, the kids are not going to get hurt. Just think of all the fun you can have here. You can move the rocks around, you can reroute the water, you can see how water responds to changes in the land, you can float little homemade boats down the water. This is just a gorgeous area. This is Rock Creek, upstream of where we were at the confluence a few minutes ago.
There's a very large couple of boulders over there. Not boulders, I mean.
Oh, it's the,
what would you call that?
It's the bedrock that's come up. Because in Virginia, there is a real problem of erosion from left over from the days when all the forests were cut down, and the soil is just such that it erodes quite rapidly. So in lots of our streams we have the bedrock exposed now.
As we've walked through here, about every 200 yards or so, it seems like the habitat changes differently. There's different trees, different things. Is that common to have that much diversity in a short amount of space?
I think it is in an area where you've had development and different land uses, and different things happened on this land through the years, different kinds of farming, small farms, grazing of cattle, or nothing. And you also have a lot of rolling hills, so you have different aspects where it's either south-facing or west-facing, north-facing. And when you are facing the sun in different directions and you're just maybe 50 feet different distance from the creek, that's going to change your vegetation cover dramatically. So what we have right here are tulip poplars, and then we will move into beeches, and then we return into the hickory oak, because then we'll be even a little higher.
We're standing now looking at a new development. We can't quite determine what it is, a lot of buildings here. Now, it's a new development. Would they be encouraged to build a trail linking to this trail network?
Yes, they would. And if the developer didn't do it, I strongly suspect that the people living there might take it upon themselves to come down here and make the connection. In many cases, when development is happening either on land on which we have the trail already or right next to it, the developers will approach us. And this is a really cool thing, because now developers and realtors are seeing the trail as an amenity, and they're advertising that their housing or their offices are located on the trail. So the developers will come to us and ask, how best can they make the access?
And, of course, in that case, do you ever have situations where they will donate money or contribute money to the, or maybe build a really nice link-up?
What they tend to do is build the link-up themselves, because the link-up will be on their land, and they are worried about liability, so they want to make it as good as they possibly can. But they are also respectful of the kind of trail that they are linking up to. And there was the developer down near Riverview Park had called us and had asked specifically, what style would you prefer these steps to be? So that was extremely thoughtful.
Is that a shift over the last 8 years since you've been a part of this?
Yes, it is. It's not that anybody had ever been against what we were doing. They just didn't know what we were doing. But the trail is very much in people's minds now and a part of the community and a resource that's here, and so people tend to see primarily the positive sides of it, and they want to be a part of it.
Now, just a quick second. We couldn't figure out exactly where we were standing. is that kind of the point
in some ways?
It is the point, although we don't want people to be afraid for that reason, and that's why if you turn around 180 degrees, you will see a very big trail sign. We tend not to put big signs in the woods, but we knew that this could be a confusing point for people coming down, and do they go left, do they go right, what is this thing that looks like a trail? And so we put that identity out there for people, and then when we get to Fifth Street in a few minutes, you will see one of our bigger trailhead signs to identify that this is a major trailhead.
Okay. Now, so we are now walking towards Fifth Street. We're on the last part of this leg of the journey. Now I can see here this is an old road here of some sort.
This is an old septic road or sewer access road, and as we're walking we'll go over manhole covers. We'll also see crossing the creek some rather old pipes that are old sewage pipes. It's just part of the urban scene that you're going to be seeing these things and occasionally smelling them. But the septic roads have been just a terrific resource for us because they were kept clear by other agencies, and it's where the original parts of the Rivanna Trail went into the city, were on old septic roads because they were easy.
Is this private property here, or would this be city property here?
What we are on most probably here is city property on which there is an easement for the sewer. So the way the easements work, the city has access for the sewer, but nothing else at this point. This land is private. This land is slated to be developed fairly soon. And again, it is our hope that the developer and the city and RTF can work together to figure out where could a public trail be on this property, how can the landowner retain privacy for the new homeowners, how can the new homeowners have access to this trail system.
Okay, so we're standing now again over Rock Creek, and I see that you have little pink tags here. Why are these pink tags here?
The pink flags are actually left over from our last work day, and if we had had enough time and if it had not been raining quite as hard, we would have done a couple little special projects here. So the pink flags are remaining here because we're hoping that we can come back and complete that project at some point.
And here, is this litter cleanup? There's
that
something.
That is part of it, yes. Okay. That's an old car seat and the springs from the car. One of the problems with some of the old septic roads is people have used them for local dump sites.
And we are coming closer and closer. I've now just seen the first evidence that we are, in fact, in a city. A big tractor trailer driving up what I guess is Fifth Street.
Okay. And then when you get past the Holiday in Willoughby area, then it becomes Fifth Street Extended.
So it's as the traffic gets louder, we're coming out to Fifth Street here. What happens to people once they get to this spot? What do they do?
What they do is they look for the little blazes that are on the telephone poles, and there's a little green arrow that tells them that they need to walk down Fifth Street at this point. We have several areas in the city for various reasons. We had to take the trail out onto roads for roadwalks, and this is one of them. So if they walk south on Fifth Street and follow those blazes on the foam poles, they will then see another left-hand turn that will take them back down the hill towards Morris Creek, and they'll get back onto the wilderness kind of trail that we've just been walking on.
Okay, so it's... And again, if you had unlimited money, would there be a better way to do this?
At this point, it's not money that would solve all the problems. It's often working with landowners to get the trail next to the creek in all cases.
From Fifth Street, I could have walked all the way to my house, but because our cars were parked about a half mile away at Jordan Park, we turned around. When we got back, I asked Foster to tell me the details of her annual walk around the entire Rivanna Trail.
Once a year, I lead a round-the-city hike on the Rivanna Trail. And what it is an almost 20-mile hike all the way around the city. We start at 6:30 in the morning from Riverview Park. We walk counterclockwise. And our pace depends very much upon who has signed up. It's very informal. It's more like a group of people who want a challenge hike getting together. But we can talk the entire time about the history that has gone into the permissions and the work that has gone into creating the trail all around the city. The event tends to attract people who have always walked certain segments of the trail over and over and over again, and here is a chance to see the entire trail. Traditionally, it's been a beautiful day. The leaves are down, so you can see all the waterways. It's still warm. It's a long day. It will take us approximately 6 to 8 hours to do. We will stop for lunch. We have a couple snacks along the way. You'll get blisters. We have to cross a couple streams, but everybody feels extremely satisfied at the end of the day. If they want more information, they can go to our website, www.rivannatrails.org, or they can email me about this at dfoster@newventure.com. And so I invite people to come, and I definitely would like people to communicate with me before they come so we have an approximate number to expect.
Well, thanks for taking me on this little tour from 6th Street Southeast to 5th Street, and thank you very much for taking me through part of the town I've never seen before.
And a beautiful part of the town. And Sean, thank you very much for inviting me to participate in your radio program.
You've been listening to the Charlottesville Podcasting Network's presentation of an interview with Diana Foster, the past president of the Rivanna Trail. We'd like to know what you think about this story. Send us a line at feedback@seavillepodcast.com.